Mr. Robert?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. I'm James Roberts, attorney for the petitioner Solomon Noro. This case is about whether the government complied with their statutory and regulatory obligations when they refused to recognize that Mr. Noro automatically became an asylee when his mother was granted asylum by the immigration court. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. The answer to this question rests purely in matters of law and how to interpret two regulations, 8 CFR 208.14 and 8 CFR 208.24, and also a recognition that these two regulations complement each other. Each of these regulations is tasked with two separate tasks. The first, 208.14, has two main tasks. The first of these is deciding which agency has the authority to adjudicate asylum claims. The second task of 208.14 is deciding what options the agency has available to it for adjudication. 208.14A describes the answer to these questions as it relates to the immigration court. It simply states that the judge may grant or deny cases they have jurisdiction over. The court may only grant or deny asylum applications. Those are its only two options. Sections 208.14B and C concern the authority of the asylum office to make decisions and also specifies the options available to the asylum office for adjudication. 208.14B simply states that the asylum office may grant asylum. 208.14C states that if the asylum office does not grant, then they must deny, dismiss, or refer the application to the immigration court. The second regulation at issue here is 8 CFR 208.24. Point 24A is concerned with the termination of asylum that was granted by the asylum office only. It has no effect on the termination decisions that are made by the immigration court or any other agencies. 8 CFR 208.24E states that when an alien's status is terminated under this section, then the service shall initiate removal proceedings as appropriate. So the only real issue before the court today is to determine whether 208.24A and E make section 208.14 superfluous, as argued by the respondent. Our position, of course, is that the two regulations are complementary. 208.14B and C applies as long as the case is in the jurisdiction of the asylum office. And as long as the case is in the jurisdiction of the asylum office cannot bypass and ignore 208.14. So this argument of the respondent that 208.14 of the petitioner, I'm used to saying respondent from immigration court. The argument of the petitioner that 208.14B and C remains applicable even when 208.24 is at play is supported by section 208.2A. This regulation states that the asylum office through the Refugee Asylum and International Operations Office shall have initial jurisdiction over asylum claims. 208.2B states that the immigration court has jurisdiction over asylum claims upon the filing of the charging document, such as the notice to appear that was filed with the court on August 14th of 2013 in these proceedings. It is upon that filing of that charging document that the jurisdiction over adjudication of this case exchanged from the asylum office to the immigration court. Simply put, the authority of the case lied solely with the USCIS until the NTA was filed with the court. On August 14th, 2013, when Mr. Noro was 21 years old, the asylum office terminated his mom's asylum and filed their charging document with the court. Then as a result, they exchanged their jurisdiction to the immigration court. 208.24 does apply to this case. It is very important in how this case proceeded, but it simply states how asylum is terminated, the procedures that the asylum office uses in determining whether to terminate asylum. And if appropriate, it also mentions that removal proceedings must begin when asylum is terminated. This-
Mr. Roberts, can I ask a question? So you just indicated as you were talking through these regulations that the USCIS office terminated the original asylum application. I mean, but doesn't that essentially make the government's point if that asylum application was terminated and the rights thereunder were extinguished? Don't we have a new case now being pursued in the immigration court, and that new case necessarily requires consideration of new facts? And one of the unfortunate new facts of this case is that your client is no longer a minor. And doesn't that end this case?
Your Honor, I don't believe it does. And I think this is one of the fundamental misunderstandings that that I believe was the problem throughout the process.
So what does it mean? I'm sorry, what does it mean to terminate the asylum? What do you think that means in terms of the consequence for the subsequent proceedings in the immigration court?
There are lots of things that I think about that question, Your Honor. The first has to do with what I was talking about with 208.2. I think 208.2 is extremely important for this question. And the reason for that is it talks about the jurisdiction of the asylum office. So why this is important is that when the asylum office has jurisdiction, they can approve it. While they continue to have jurisdiction, they can terminate it. So this intermediary step of approval and then termination doesn't change the fact that at the conclusion of their jurisdiction, they did not grant asylum. Since they did not grant asylum at their conclusion of their jurisdiction, then the case should have been referred. It is not a new application, because at the end of the jurisdiction, asylum was not granted. The fact that it was granted as an intermediate step only confuses the issue. Regarding the
I'm not sure what you mean by it's granted as an intermediate step. It either was granted or not, and the government says it was granted at that initial step and then subsequently terminated because of the allegations regarding fraud, which the immigration judge, to his credit, at least engaged with and determined that your client was not at fault. But the fact of the matter remains that initial application was granted, the asylum application was granted, it was terminated. And from the government's perspective, we're now dealing with a new claim and the sad fact that your client is now an adult, no longer a minor, and therefore no longer entitled to derivative asylee status. So I don't know what you mean by terminated as an intermediary step. What does that mean as in the context of the regulations?
I think it has to do with the meaning of this phrase you used, as an initial step they were granted. As an initial step, she was granted asylum. As an initial step, that asylum was terminated. They're both initial steps under the regulation. They're both initial steps under the regulation because...
What else would have had to have occurred in order to make that final, in your view?
The loss of jurisdiction. It becomes final upon the loss of jurisdiction. The jurisdiction is lost according to 208.2b when the NTA is filed. Until the NTA is filed, it's always going to be an initial step, as 208.14 states. It's the initial authority.
Sorry, Mr. Roberts, let me make sure I understand. But asylum is always, I guess, contingent. It's never permanent, I don't think. You can lose the benefit of asylum either because of change in conditions in your home. Depends with regard to the petitioner. So in that sense, I guess you're right that it's never final, but I don't know that it answers the question as to the fact that the USCIS terminated that determination of asylum, and then a new case began anew in the immigration court. And I'm still struggling to understand why that new case doesn't now require consideration of new facts.
Because, Your Honor, I do not believe it is a new case. I think the arguments that this is a new application is a circular argument. They're saying it's a new application because it's not referred. Because it's not referred, then they say he's not protected by the Child Status Protection Act because he's over 21 and he needs his own application. In our opinion, this is not a separate argument. It's the same argument we've been discussing. If a case is referred, then the judge adjudicates the referred application. If it's not referred, the IJ adjudicates the new application. If the court determines it's a referred application, which I'm arguing that it is, then his mother has adjudicated asylum application was in fact the original one, and the petitioner is protected by the CSPA. Because the case was referred by an active regulation, it's not a new application. The regulations, in fact, allow an application to be amended and supplemented. The immigration judge having jurisdiction may permit an asylum applicant to amend and supplement under 8 CFR 208.4C. When additional grounds were added to the asylum claim, in fact, it was being amended and supplemented. It's not a new application. Again, the reason that I say that it's not a new application is because it is referred. When an application is referred, it is sent to the asylum office, to the court, as part of a referral package in compliance with 208.14 B and C.
Mr. Roberts, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chief. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Thank you. Where in the record is the evidence that, or the finding, or whatever it is, the document that says this case has been referred from USCIS to the immigration court? Where is that in the record?
Well, to the contrary, Your Honor, I think if you look at if you look at the pages 74 and 75 of the certified administrative record, it says to the opposite, that there was, it makes it clear that there is no referral package. And again, but this is a circular argument that I was referring to. They're saying that this is not a referral because there's no referral package. But this is the point that I was trying to make. It's not the referral package that makes it a referral. It's the application of the regulations that make it a referral.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Roberts, it was referred from the government standpoint, as they've said, for the purposes of removal, to give due process for removal, correct? Why do you seem to concede that DHS has the authority to terminate asylum? Why do you concede that?
They have the authority to terminate asylum because 208.24 gives them that authority.
Yeah, but you started the movie too late. You got to start the movie from the beginning. The beginning is the United States Congress. Congress acted in the Immigration and Nationality Act. That's where the authority comes from, in section 1158. You have to first deal with that. And in that authority, it gave the DOJ the right to grant and to terminate asylum, but it did not do so for DHS. It did not. And when it amended that act in 2005, it specifically did not give them that right to terminate asylum. The referral is for removal, but the asylum is arbitrary. I think I'm gonna get in more with your colleague there, because you seem to be, fortunately for you, you can't concede what the law is if you're wrong. The law deals with the first is jurisdiction, first of all. So I won't take up any time because you didn't argue that, but as to what you're talking about the referral, the government said a referral is just for removal because they said we've already terminated asylum. Matter of fact, the government is arguing in this case that the IJ had no jurisdiction or authority even to consider the matter because asylum was already done deal. And that's the whole theory, that it must have been a new application for asylum because the first one was done before it got to the IJ. We're going to get into that later, but I'm just curious that you bypassed it. These regulations, CFRs, Congress didn't give that authority to come up with regulations, and the statute is clear. But we'll later. Okay, but I'm just wondering why you concede that.
I think it's a misunderstanding, Your Honor. The way that I see it is that it's a very simple issue. The applicant, Ms. Wilson, the mother of the respondent, applied for asylum. Once she applied for asylum, it became the authority of the asylum office to adjudicate that case. At the end of the adjudication, what we know is they failed to grant asylum. That's all we know. The termination is a red herring because what happened? She applied for asylum, they did not give it to her. That's all. Since she applied for asylum, they didn't give it to her, it was referred to the court for adjudication of that case. That's what happens with a referral. That's what happens when a person applies for asylum is inadmissible under the 212A6CI. When she presented that case, we know that she discussed the issues that were at bar at the asylum office regarding the fraud, because she would have been disqualified from asylum if there had been fraud as found by the judge. So she did confront all of these issues. She confronted everything that was about that original application. She confronted the issues of fraud that were related to the original application. It was the original application that was being decided. Of course, I understand your argument that the INA does not permit a final denial. It doesn't. But at the same time, they can terminate their decision to grant asylum. This only means that in the end they chose not to give asylum. It's a separate issue, I think, than the one that the court's making.
But counsel, if you make an application for asylum and you're denied in the first instance, there's a right to appeal, correct?
Well, if you're denied under...
Just answer the question.
No, Your Honor. If you're denied under 208.14c, then there is no appeal. You cannot go to the federal court. I've tried that and it just doesn't work.
Federal court? I'm not saying the federal court.
You can't appeal it to the immigration court either once it's denied. But and the reason is clear from 208.14c, because a denial means you're in status. A denial means you're in status. If a person is in status, then he can't be sent to the court because he has status. A referral is done when a person's not in status and is inadmissible. So the word deny it has a different meaning under these regs than it does under the INA.
All right, go ahead. Are you finished?
Sorry, Your Honor. So again, I wanted to look at 208.14 one more time. And we can see from this section that the asylum office has four options, unlike the two that the immigration court has. The options that the regulations give them are to grant, to deny, dismiss, or refer. As long as the case is in their custody, they're tasked with choosing among these four options. Among these options, we know she was not approved. We know she was not approved because the approval came, it was terminated, those two cancel each other out. They still had jurisdiction, it was not approved. Because it's not approved, then you take a look at the next sections. If it's not approved, they have to deny, dismiss, or refer. Thus, the asylum office, while they still had jurisdiction, the approval came and it was gone. The DHS was misled by the fact that this intermediate step, the asylum approval before termination, was initiated and their jurisdiction ended. That's why I call it an intermediate step, because they have the initial jurisdiction over the claim. They have the initial jurisdiction over the claim. So during that initial jurisdiction period, it doesn't matter that it was approved, denied. They can do whatever they want during the time that they have jurisdiction. At the end of their jurisdiction, we know that she was not approved. Therefore, they continue to have the obligation to deny, dismiss, or refer. The asylum application remained in the hands of the asylum office through the time of the approval. Since the approval was not the final option, to deny an application, this is done when an applicant is in status, as it's shown in the regulation. They may dismiss an application, and a dismissal is done when an application is not granted, but removal proceedings may not be initiated, or they may refer an application. 208.14c1 states that in a case of an applicant who appears to be inadmissible or deportable under section 212A or 237A of the Act, the asylum officer shall refer the applicant's application to the immigration judge together with the appropriate charging documents for adjudication in removal proceedings. Mr. Noro and his mother appeared inadmissible and deportable upon the final adjudication of the case. Therefore, referral under 208.14c1 is the only option that was available to the asylum office. This would have been the same if he were terminated for any of the other reasons that termination exists. Reasons for termination are included in 208.24. As the court said, there are multiple reasons for termination, a showing of fraud, a change of circumstances, criminal reasons, and all of these reasons, whether it's terminated for fraud, whether it's terminated for criminal reasons, whether it's terminated for change of circumstances, it doesn't change the fact that when that termination happens, then the jurisdiction ends. Prior to the time that the jurisdiction ends, the notice to appear is filed. So it doesn't matter that it was granted and then terminated. What matters is the asylum office chose not to give asylum. Mr. Noor entered the U.S. when he was 14. In 2006, he began living as an asylee. He obtained his status based upon his mother's approved asylum claim based upon her politically motivated fear and her continuing fear of detention. When the asylum office years later obtained information that seemed to call that approval into question, they still had jurisdiction over the case. They never lost jurisdiction over the case. Because they continued to have jurisdiction during this topsy-turvy period of approval and denial, it doesn't matter that the approval came, that the termination came. What matters is at the end of their jurisdiction, they did not approve asylum. They handed over jurisdiction to the court, and they should have referred it when they did that, because they must have denied it, dismissed it, or referred it, and denial and dismissal are not options. So another argument.
I think your time is up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Mr. Perkins?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Paul Perkins on behalf of the Attorney General. The petitioner was deported earlier this year after the Department of Homeland Security terminated his derivative asylee status, after he conceded to removability, and after he submitted and then withdrew his own asylum application. Petitioner now asks this court to find that his removal proceedings should be terminated because even though he is now an adult, he is nonetheless eligible for derivative asylee status reserved only for children through his mother's newly granted asylum application. But this is the same argument that both the Immigration Court and the Board of Immigration Appeals already rejected, and that this court already determined did not warrant a stay of removal. Because the petitioner urges an interpretation of the applicable regulations that are contrary to a plain reading, and the board's implementation of those regulations was not manifestly contrary to law, this court should deny the petition for review. Now, as the petitioner's counsel just explained, the central question, in fact, the only issue before the court now, is whether the applicable regulations, 8 CFR 208.14 and 208.24, require an asylum officer, after approving an application and granting asylum, and then subsequently terminating the grant of asylum and initiating removal proceedings, must also refer the underlying asylum application to an immigration judge to perform a de novo review. According to a plain reading of these regulations, the answer is no. The regulations provide two separate processes, a process for the initial adjudication of an application and then a separate process for termination of the grant of asylum. So we'll begin with 8 CFR 208.14 B and C, where we see DHS's process for adjudicating asylum applications. And what we see in B, first we see two separate tracks. And in B, we see that an asylum officer can grant an asylum application. In C, we see that if an asylum application is not granted after an interview, that the asylum officer must deny, dismiss, or refer the application for adjudication and removal proceedings. And in C1, as the petitioner's counsel already explained, in C1 we find that the application is referred for adjudication and removal proceedings when the applicant appears to be inadmissible and deportable. And now there are two issues I want to discuss here in this particular regulation. So the petitioner claims that once an application is terminated, that the application essentially becomes non-adjudicated again. It essentially goes back in time to when the application was initially filed, before it had been approved, and before it was then terminated. But there's nothing in 14C to suggest any sort of process beyond the initial adjudication of an application after it's been filed.
Mr. Perkins, Judge Diaz here. Chief Judge Gregory asked the question of your colleague on the other side about the authority of the DHS to actually terminate applications. Can you respond to that? I mean, it seems clear on the face of the regulations, but there may be an inconsistency here with the statute. Can you address that?
Right. So I'll begin with the petitioner has not raised this issue, didn't raise this issue below to the immigration judge, to the Board of Immigration Appeals, has not raised this issue now to this court, has in fact conceded that DHS has this authority to terminate an application.
We determine what the law is. This is a jurisdiction. You raised the question yourself because you said that the IJ had no jurisdiction to even consider once it had been terminated. So it's before the court. And go ahead and proceed with in terms of statute. Tell us exactly, as Judge Diaz said, I brought it up, because obviously Mr. Roberts didn't think much of it. But the point there is that what is the statutory authority for DHS to terminate asylum?
Sure. First, let me say, because this issue has not been raised, it hasn't been fully briefed. In fact, it hasn't been briefed at all. So if there are any arguments I don't bring up right now, we're not waiving those arguments. And also I would say that both the Fifth Circuit and the Third Circuit have held that an immigration judge doesn't have jurisdiction to review a termination decision. The Board of Immigration Appeals, a matter of ASJ, has held the same thing. And I know this issue has been briefed in the Ninth Circuit before. And so the arguments we raised in that case are, in fact, I think petitioner's counsel made this argument, which is the grant of authority to DHS to grant asylum in itself carries with it the ability to then terminate that asylum.
What did you get that from? What's the statutory authority for that?
Well, again, this is an argument that we've
it's an argument
we've not briefed here.
It's an argument that makes no sense, because you're saying that if there is statutorily, if Congress gives you the power to grant something, automatically you can deny it. That's not in any framework of statutory instruction or the law. The point is, you know, it does not give DHS the authority to terminate asylum, only the DOJ. And when they changed the law in 2005, they made it very clear that the DOJ can grant and terminate, but it specifically said in terms of DHS could only grant. You have no authority to do so. And under the framework of the CFRs, is of no moment. because Congress never gave you any assignment to make regulations, to interpret the statute. And it's a clear statute. And it's deliberately kept from you. Because Congress could have changed that, because it set forth, you can grant, they can grant, you can grant, but deny is only, and it makes sense. Because that, when you talk about terminating someone's asylum, should be more than no disrespect than an officer doing it. There's a whole rubric under the Attorney General and the DOJ for Article I judge to look at those things. So Congress never gave DHS the authority to terminate, because that's, you need that, because the whole point, you would have said, had to have ended her asylum. And even though she won before the IJ, it had to have been a new application. No, you never had the authority to terminate their asylum. What you did was you looked at it and you referred it for removal, but you could not terminate the asylum. And you can't show me anywhere where you have been given that authority to do so.
I understand the point you're making.
No, I'm not making a point. I'm making a point of someone, that's the law. We act under the Congress. We don't make up the law, we interpret the law. It is clear Congress specifically did not give you the authority to terminate asylum. Only the DOJ can do that. You can grant it, but you can't terminate it.
I understand, Judge Gregory. I would say that the Fifth Circuit and the Third Circuit and the Board of Immigration Appeals have disagreed with the position you're articulating. And I will say that the Department of Homeland Security can't just revoke, terminate asylum for no reason at all. There are legitimate reasons. For example, in this instance, in 208.24(c)(1), we find the grant of asylum can be terminated based upon a finding of fraud such that the application should have never been granted to begin with.
I apologize, because this is not an issue that I'm very familiar with. But why wouldn't we look, and maybe I'll just need to do more work on this, I don't want you to speculate, but why wouldn't we look at 6 USC 271B3, which gives DHS the authority to adjudicate asylum applications? And if we go back to sort of the prior case where we talk about sort of fraud in the inducement of a contract, is void at initial sort of time. And in the same way, if we can adjudicate an asylum application, if there was fraud in the initial adjudication, then the initial adjudicator can remedy that by saying at the time it was first granted, it was based on fraudulent conduct. And therefore the asylum application that was previously granted was based on fraud and therefore is ungranted, which is another way of saying terminated. But why?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Judge Richardson. In fact, that's sort of the point, although less articulately, that's the point I was trying to make when referring to 208.24(c)(1), where the Department of Homeland Security has the authority per that regulation to terminate a grant of asylum on the basis of fraud in the underlying application. So I think you're exactly right. The point I was trying to make, if I could move on.
But even if that's right, that would only be for the purposes of the officer making that determination. But the referral would have to be due process for the IJ to look at that. It wouldn't automatically terminate. Because think about that. All you have to do is make an allegation of fraud. You adjudicate it with a Article I judge. You make this determination by an officer, and then that ends, and you go and find out that it was a bogus reason for the fraud, then they have to go all the way back. The problem is the persecution that it was the basis for the asylum, no telling how many years ago, may be very difficult to then accumulate that. And then a derivative asylum, as the here, Mr. Nuru, is lost. The whole idea, that's why Congress did not give you the right to terminate. Yes, you can adjudicate. You can adjudicate many things. You can determine whether how much this and that, but that doesn't mean termination. And it specifically said only DOJ could terminate. Because it's parallel these other things you're talking about, but the parallel stops with termination, and it makes sense. because you can't terminate it. You refer it, that there's reason to believe there's fraud, and we're referring this for removal. But the question ultimately of whether or not it should be terminated is for the IJ. And that's what Congress meant, and that's what it said. We, you know, the world might construe by its wit, but we must construe by the law. And the law is based on the Congress. Everything else, we always say, we're a passive branch of government. We adjudicate, interpret what Congress did. And Congress made it clear that DHS, an agency with officers, cannot terminate asylum. Asylum is very, asylum is so precious that even our court, an Article III court, we can't even grant asylum. Even if we determined that it was totally done wrong, we'd have to go back and back because only the Attorney General can do that. We can't even as a court, as a remedy. And that's why Congress did not give DHS officers, prefects, the right to terminate. Yes, you can adjudicate. Your adjudication comes along. You look at the application, you do those things, you decide whether or not you can refer it, whether or not you will not, but termination is special. And Congress made it special and reemphasized that in 2005 when it changed the ID Real Act and said, you only the Attorney General. And you know that. And you know about the Ninth Circuit case. And I agree with you, counsel. It was not briefed. Again, Mr. Robert, that's why I could only mention it to him and didn't even talk apparently only to you as well. But you have to look at the law. And you can't even not brought up this court has to follow the law and what Congress allowed, not what lawyers, what their preparation is or what their arguments are and what's there. It's what Congress did. And you have to do in those cases you cite, none of them really looked at that. I just looked at those cases. None of them grapple with the idea of Section 1158. That's where it starts. So you can't do something that you had no right to do that Congress never gave you to do. And that's why her asylum never ended. It never ended. And when she had a chance to have a due process hearing on the issue of fraud before an Article I judge, as Congress laid it out, she prevailed. There was no fraud, no proof of sufficient fraud. And her asylum never ended because you couldn't terminate it. That's why you're left with that. So, but I understand you may not know what the law is in terms of that, and you're not ready for that, and that's not your fault because I guess that wasn't teed up properly for you. That's why you always start with jurisdiction. I tell all my law clerks, the first thing an Article III judge is determined, do we have jurisdiction to handle this case? No matter what the merits are, how much we might like and enamored by your arguments, if we don't have jurisdiction, you didn't have jurisdiction to terminate. And determination is not there, never ended, and he still has derivative abilities as that. Because think about the alternative. The alternative that you could just have a fraud and then it's terminated. And then you got to go back, well, you won your case, you win the battle, but you lose the war. And how would he ever be able then now to go back since he's been here all these years in the United States, show persecution in that country? If you think about it, makes sense why Congress didn't give them. It really does. It's a sense of justice that Congress did there. They know they were. DOJ has a whole scheme laid out. DHS doesn't. They just sort of, okay, you're terminated. Apparently not very good reason when the IJ looked at it.
Well, so a couple points in response, Your Honor. I do understand what you're saying, but what I will say is that the grant of asylum by a Department of Homeland Security is entirely discretionary. The department does have authority to grant, as we already discussed, to deny, to dismiss, to refer asylum applications, so that authority is inherent within the department's, within the regulations and within, we would argue, the statute by its very nature, because it gives the department the authority to deny, to dismiss, to approve. There is. But I've already been, yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Bergen, I'm sorry, I'm still trying to get caught up. So as I understand the state of play, the regulations permit termination. The argument that the chief has laid out is that the statute doesn't permit the regulations. And I guess the question I've got and haven't thought through is where the regulation is in place and it permits termination, there's been no challenge under the APA to the regulation. Aren't we bound by the regulation absent a challenge under the APA? The APA provides the avenue for challenging regulations. There's been no such challenge to the regulation. Can we then invalidate, absent argument here, the regulation that permits termination?
That sounds right, Your Honor. Again, this hasn't been fully briefed, and so I don't want to speak out of turn. As far as I know, the regulation has not been challenged under the APA. That's certainly not part of this petition for review. This argument, as I said, it hasn't been raised.
Counsel, you know that that's not required. Only Chevron deference we have to give you. And here, you can't come close to making a Chevron deference argument because the statute, it never laid out. And the APA process, that occurs when Congress gives you the authority to promulgate regulations, and there's a procedure for looking at that in review and consultation. That would have happened, but here, you never were given tasked with that. That's why there's no APA challenge, and there's no Chevron deference. We're looking at the elements of that. Those are your assignments, so we don't defer to it. And the statute is clear. And in 2005, I don't see how Congress could have made it clear. It couldn't have been an accident, a misstep, an oversight. No, we said, no, DHS, you're not giving you the right to termination. It's one thing, that's key. You can adjudicate, you can deny it, you can refer it, and those things like that. But once you do grant it, it's a property interest. Is it absolute? No. It's not absolute. But when it comes to terminating, it's Congress said only the DOJ can do that. That's how precious it is. That's a very important part. It distinguishes America from a lot of countries in that asylum. And it means something. And it's important. And you just can't whisk it away, because it comes from Congress. And that's why the Attorney General has those authorities. And it's not here. And I understand, I appreciate, counsel, you're not ready on it. And maybe we can do something about it. I don't know. In terms of maybe give you a chance to look at it, but I don't know. But the law is, I think, pretty clear in terms of the authority. You don't have it to terminate. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I understand the point you're making. If the court is inclined to rule in that direction, I would ask that you ask the parties, or I'm not even sure this is the right vehicle for your holding, because the petitioner has conceded, and in fact has, it appears, endorsed our argument that
you can't concede the law. It's like you can't concede jurisdiction. You can't concede.
Understood. Understood. The point I'm trying to make is, if you are inclined to rule in that direction, we would ask that you give the parties an opportunity to brief that particular issue, because as I've said several times, that issue has not come up at all in this case. And I understand that it's an issue that that you're interested in. And so I would ask that you give the parties an opportunity to brief that issue. If we could get back to the regulations, another point I wanted to make about 208.14 B and C is that when under 14C, when an application is referred, the immigration judge has jurisdiction to adjudicate that application. And the reason is we can see in the language itself that upon referral, so when an application is referred, it is referred for adjudication in removal proceedings. And so the immigration judge has jurisdiction at that point to review and to adjudicate the application. That's actually the same situation that any alien would be in removal proceedings who wants to seek asylum. At that point, they would file an asylum application with the immigration judge. And the reason that's significant is, as we've talked about many times in the past 15 minutes or so, the petitioner has conceded that the immigration judge does not have jurisdiction to review the termination decision. So under the petitioner's reading of the regulation, what we have is after DHS approves an application and then terminates the grant of asylum and refers it to an immigration judge, the immigration judge does not have jurisdiction to review the termination decision, which in this instance it was a determination that the application should have never been granted to begin with because it contained fraud. So there's no jurisdiction to review the termination decision, but there is jurisdiction, according to petitioner, to review, to perform a de novo review of the underlying application. So the problem with petitioner's argument is that those reviews are effectively the same thing. They're both looking at the underlying merits of the application. So we would submit that the only reading of 208.14b and c that makes sense is that they speak exclusively to DHS's initial adjudication of an application. If I could take a few minutes to also talk about 208.14e and by reference 208.24, which set out the process for terminating a grant of asylum. And the language in those regulations provide that any grant of asylum is subject to termination upon a showing of fraud in the application, such that the application should not have been granted. And then at that point, upon termination, DHS shall refer, or I'm sorry, shall initiate the removal proceedings as appropriate. And so two points here that I want to make. First, there's no requirement or no inference at all in this language that upon termination of an application, that that application is then referred to an immigration judge for a de novo review. And there's no suggestion that an application upon termination returns to its initial status upon initial filing. And the reason that point is significant is because if DHS had wanted to include this referral process after termination, they would have said so. And we know that because that language is included in 208.14c1. As we've already discussed, that's where it provides that the asylum officer shall refer the application to an immigration judge for adjudication and removal proceedings. That language does not appear in 24A1. The language there simply provides that the agency shall initiate removal proceedings. It says nothing about referral of the application. And that makes sense because by definition, when a grant of asylum is terminated, that means that the asylum application has been adjudicated. It can only be terminated after it has been approved, after the application has been approved, and only after an asylum officer determines that there was fraud in the application, such that the application should have never been granted. Therefore, we believe that 208.14e and 208.24 provide the process for termination of asylum granted under 208.14b, and that once terminated, an asylum claim is over, and there's no language to suggest otherwise. Now, this interpretation of the regulations is entirely consistent with the Board of Immigration Appeals decision in matter of ASJ. Now, in that case, the facts are similar to this case. The petitioner applied for asylum, or I'm sorry, the alien applied for asylum, was granted asylum. 10 years later, the grant of asylum was terminated. At that point, the removal proceedings were initiated. And the immigration judge in that case did look at the termination decision to determine whether it agreed with that decision. It did not. But the Board of Immigration Appeals, in reviewing what the immigration judge did, determined that the immigration judge did not have jurisdiction to review the termination decision. And importantly, the BIA held that the alien did have a right to reapply for asylum, to file a new asylum application. This is consistent with the Fifth Circuit's understanding of these regulations, consistent with the Third Circuit's review of these regulations. And that's the exact process that played out here.
And counsel, but in ASJ and those others, they never looked at the statute 1158. They didn't interpret the statute at all.
I understand.
They never addressed the issue. It's like hidden in plain sight. Everybody's all running all around with DHS. And, you know, of course, all this is post 9/11 and DHS was formulated under that whole different rubric, but that's why Congress said no, but still there's due process left. That's why this agency does not have the right to terminate. And none of them looked at 1158. None of them.
Right. And again, you know, as I've said before, our interpretation of the statute is that giving DHS the authority to grant asylum, within it, there's an inherent authority to evaluate whether that asylum should or should not have been granted somewhere down the road. And per the regulation, upon a finding of fraud, the grant of asylum can be terminated. So for all these reasons, we submit that the board correctly concluded that the petitioner was removable and termination of his proceedings was not warranted. This conclusion was certainly not manifestly contrary to law. If there are no further questions from the court, we therefore ask the court to deny the petition for review.
Thank you, counsel, for your argument. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Roberts, you have, we'll give you some time.
I'll be very brief, Your Honor. The question is whether the DHS can send a case to the court without a referral. As the government just said, it's over, the government said, when it's terminated and cannot be referred because it's over. In my earlier arguments, I explained why it's referred. However, the chief judge has also explained why this argument cannot succeed, why it cannot be over when it's sent to the court. This is because the DOJ can grant and deny asylum, but the DHS can only grant. They cannot deny a case. If termination meant it was over, then termination would mean that the DHS has the authority, the statutory authority, to deny a case, which they do not have.
Well, I think they actually do have the authority to deny. Well, I thought the chief's point was that once granted, they can't terminate. And I don't want to speak for him, but.
I don't know if Mr. Roberts is talking about, that's the point, the termination. Anything further, counsel?
No, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you so much, counsel. We can't come down and greet you and shake your hand, but know that we very much appreciate your argument. And thank you so much for helping the court with these very thorny issues. And we ask you, hope that you will stay safe and be well. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.